This spring, the city of Bloomington launched the Rosemary Miller Lecture Series on Historic Preservation with a keynote speech by Duncan Campbell, a professor of architecture and historic preservation at Ball State University. Campbell's subject was a self-taught female architect who built 11 unique houses in Bloomington in the 1950s and 60s. Yael Cassander reports.
In architectural design, it seems, there's a lot of cycling. Think of how many different architectural styles, for example, end with the term revival. Preservationists have long embraced multi-gabled Queen Anne cottages and arts and crafts bungalows. And by now, enough time has passed to revalue a more recent architectural iteration.
Modernist residences, particularly mid-century modern, which is, if you don't know, all the rage.
Architectural historian Duncan Campbell first got to know about Elaine Dungis's contribution to mid-century modern design when he was working as a carpenter in Bloomington.
I got a call from the Wanklands, the roof leaked. And I got out there and I said, well, no wonder it leaks, it's flat. And when we got up there anticipating that we would find a plywood deck on top of a standard sort of set of joist work, we were very surprised when we drilled into the roof surface and styrofoam came out on the drill bit. And so we took a sawzall and we cut down through it, and there was like a 6-inch pad of insulated foam that had plywood glued to the top of it. That was the surface of the roof. And then it had tar on top of that. And underneath it was a piece of Sellotex glued to the foam, and that was the finished ceiling. We were fit to be tied. I mean, we'd never seen anything like it, let alone know how to make it stop leaking. That was my introduction to the house, and actually to Elaine.
But the introduction was only virtual. Elaine herself had long since moved away by then.
Elaine Dungis was here for really too short a time in terms of what she might have done.
Elaine Dungis came to Bloomington in the early 1950s as a young faculty wife with some long-standing ambitions.
She wants to go to architecture school in 1942 or 3, and she goes to the University of Syracuse, and she talks to the dean about applying, and he tells her that he'll let her into the school and he'll even give her a scholarship, but he doesn't think she'll ever get a job because of her gender. So she doesn't go. Instead, she gets hold of the Yale School of Architecture curriculum, and when she comes to IU with her husband, she starts going to the library here, and she basically teaches herself architecture, reads architectural history, does the exercises, takes classes in math and science, and teaches herself to draw.
Dungis had immersed herself in the industrial aesthetic that had come to the fore during the first half of the 20th century, in which functionality and economy of scale prevailed. A building engaged its natural surroundings, and new construction materials informed design trends. Philip Johnson's glass house, for example, Frank Lloyd Wright's prairie-style homes, and the houses of tomorrow showcased at the 1933 Chicago World's Fair.
These houses that were built out of concrete block and stainless steel and had flat roofs and windows on the corners and concrete floors and pipe rail, handrails, and lots of glass block.
Elaine's first interpretation of the international modern style is still standing on Hillsdale Drive in Bloomington.
And this is Elaine's very own house. It's the first house she ever built from start to finish. 1,100 square feet.
After designing her own place, Elaine started hiring herself out to people she knew. Despite Elaine's machine-age design style, the appeal for her clients lay in the way Elaine personalized each home.
She knew these people personally because they were all faculty members and wives and husbands. And so the idea that you could hire somebody you knew to design your own space was pretty novel. Remember, this is the time of post-World War II track houses. And so the idea that you could actually customize the house the way you wanted it and get the size rooms and the number of bedrooms, Elaine talked about it as the thing that was so particularly wonderful about it. These were not developer-built tract houses. These were personalized houses.
Elaine's empathy for the lives her clients were living was especially evident in the separation between public and private space in these small residences.
Elaine was very concerned, as were other faculty at the time, with having the ability to entertain. And so she was very careful to separate entertainment areas, living, dining, and kitchen area, from the privacy areas. And that seems kind of normal if you think about revival-style houses where all the entertainment area or public areas on the ground floor and all the bedrooms and everything are upstairs. But these houses are frequently less than 1,100 square feet, and privacy is dear and not easy to accomplish. And so she usually use the sort of utility corridor to create it.
The narrow corridor, galley kitchen, central hearth, and copious built-ins were recurring motifs in Dungis houses, not to mention
the exposed beam, slope ceiling, the open rooms with corner windows, lots of glass. This is the sunken living room a couple of steps down. Again, the hearth. Most of our houses originally had shag carpeting in them. Remember shag carpeting? And it was usually gold.
Shag carpeting may not have withstood the test of time, but other newly available products Elaine used have had more staying power, from the high-quality wood paneling she installed across walls and ceilings to an experimental floor treatment.
The floor in the back is poured concrete stained in solution. They pour it as a color. It's absolutely beautiful. And then they score it to look like big panels. The color goes all the way through. You can't wear it off.
Dungis houses are also distinguished by the way they communicate with their surroundings.
She was also very interested in the sort of indoor-outdoor relationship, which is what glass, of course, provides. But she was also very interested in porches and verandas and balconies, and almost all of the houses have something like that.
Elaine Dungis wasn't a licensed architect, and no one is quite sure whether she designed any more houses after leaving Bloomington in the late 60s. At least two of the original owners are still living in the 9 extant Dungis houses. And although Dungis' version of modern has a certain datedness to it now, the home's clean lines, small footprint, and environmental orientation remain very contemporary. For WFIU's Artworks, I'm Yael Cassander.
Once you see the original photos of our homes on our website at wfiu.org/arts, you'll start to recognize the Dungis homes on Hillsdale, Moores Pike, Browncliff, Pleasant Ridge, Nancy, and Rose. Just a reminder, these are private residences.